We finish up Philippians 2 this morning. I think we've been in this chapter for at least a month and a half, maybe 2 months now, maybe more. I haven't kept track. It's been a while. And being as there's four chapters in Philippians, we're almost halfway through if we finish today, and we'll just have two more chapters left in this epistle. Last week, we looked at Paul's relationship to Timothy, and at Timothy specifically, and how he was devoted to the advance of the gospel, just as Paul was. If you haven't been here with us before, let me tell you, we tie these things together as we come back each week, so you won't be lost. And those of you that have missed a week or two, hopefully you don't feel like you've missed anything, and that's what I'm going to do here this morning. In fact, Timothy, like we learned last week, was unified with Paul. In all ways, being the only one that Paul could consider to be worthy replacement for him. If Paul couldn't be there with the Philippian church, if Paul was in prison at this point, Paul would send his mini-me. He'd send Timothy. He'd groomed Timothy, led Timothy to the Lord, knew Timothy's mother. He would send Timothy. We saw a great example of that last week. And what a blessing it was to Paul to have someone like-minded that would share the ministry with him in that way. Timothy, in many ways, was fulfilling the very same characteristics that Paul had just commanded the Philippian church that we read to develop and characterize in their lives. And it's by no mistake, as you might imagine, Paul is specifically now presenting Timothy as someone that they can not only trust, but as someone that they should emulate. He presented Timothy as someone who emulated him and who emulated Christ. He was an example, as Paul was. Paul was using that to demonstrate the character traits that he wanted this church to follow and for us to. There's someone else, though, that we see here. I told you last week, this is an interesting section. We just come through so much theology here in chapter 2. And as we come to the end here, it's less theological. But there's always something there. And I hope I proved that to you last week, and I'll do it again this week. Someone else here that's an example. Although he wasn't a shepherd or a preacher or an elder like Timothy, he was someone that most all of this of these Philippians in this church could identify with. See, Paul was showing us or presenting Timothy to us as an example of what to be like. Of course, more specifically, he wanted us to see Timothy as an example, as an elder, as a leader, as a shepherd, someone like him. Now Paul presents another familiar face to the church in Philippi. And his name is Epaphroditus. Epaphroditus was one of them. He was one that we see in the first opening words here of this letter to the Philippians. Paul and Timothy, a servant of Christ Jesus, to all the saints in Christ Jesus. He was one of them. And I'm going to do something a bit different this morning. I'm going to take us through this thing. But let me read our text before I get too far ahead here. Let's get an introduction to this man and who he is. I'll be reading Philippians 2, 25 through 30. And again, this will complete chapter 2 for us. I'll be starting in verse 25. I have thought it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother and fellow worker and fellow soldier, and your messenger and minister to my need. For he has been longing for you all and has been distressed because you heard that he was ill. Indeed, he was ill, near to death. But God had mercy on him, and not only on him, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. I am the more eager to send him, therefore, that you may rejoice at seeing him again, and that I may be less anxious. So receive him in the Lord with all joy, and honor such men. For he nearly died for the work of Christ, risking his life to complete what was lacking in your service to me. Like I said, I'm going to do a little bit something different this week. Generally, I would start there in verse 25, and we'd probably start with, I have, and I would start from there and work on. But what I want to do this morning is I want you to look at verse 29. I want to look at this key point that he's making here, and that'll give us the setting for the message here. It says there in verse 29, "So receive him in the Lord with all joy and honor such men." He's talking about Epaphroditus. "Receive him in the Lord with all joy and honor such men." That's our key this morning as we look at this. Any one of us would be overjoyed to be described like that, wouldn't we? Paul is commanding this church to receive him in the Lord with all joy and honor such a man. Now, Paul often did this. What we learn here about Epaphroditus, the only time Epaphroditus is ever mentioned, is in these verses I just read to you in this small book, four chapters, this letter to the Philippians. Paul would do this because we see in Timothy, being brought up last week, and Paul talked about the only one that he had that was like-minded that he could send. And that was because Timothy had a specific purpose in preaching and teaching and leading the church. And Paul wrote two other letters to Timothy that made it into the canon of Scripture. But Epaphroditus is just mentioned here in passing. But Paul would do this from time to time. He would bring up these common everyday people and bring up the characteristics, the Christ-likeness in them, to show them as examples for us. He did this of Phoebe in Romans 16. He had sent this young lady to a church in Rome, carrying a letter the same as he did here with Epaphroditus. And he says in Romans 16, 1 through 2, he says, "I commend to you our sister Phoebe, a servant of the church at Caesarea, that you may welcome her in the Lord in a way worthy of the saints, and help her in whatever she may need from you, for she has been a patron of many and of myself as well." These were normal people, Phoebe and Epaphroditus, who were serving in the church in some form. Not elders, not preachers, not teachers. These were not Timothy's or Paul's or even Mark's, as we saw last week. These were just normal, everyday people filling the pew. They were members of their local church who looked to serve the Lord as believers no matter where they found themselves and no matter what the task was, no matter how mundane. I'd probably guess that there are some of you here this morning who have attended churches for years or members of churches that have never done anything but just attended. And Melissa and I are that way for the majority of our life together. We came, we sat, we heard, we prayed, we were done, and we left. That's not what fellowship looks like, and we've talked about that over the last several weeks. That's not what unity looks like. And don't get me wrong, those elements are in there, but it falls short of our designed engagement in a local body. We're to be of service. And we know that because Christ served, didn't he? We saw that a few weeks ago. We're to be Christ-like in that way. And Paul served, and we're to see him as an example. Timothy served, and we're to see him as an example. And even Mark, imperfectly in the beginning, became useful for service, didn't he? And Paul has given us these examples of service, and now we get a glimpse at Epaphroditus this morning in just four verses. Just good old normal, average Joe, church member Epaphroditus. So if we thought that we could get by just seeing these giants in Scripture without having to take on or emulate what they presented to us, Paul reminds us with Epaphroditus. Let me introduce you to this normal man. We don't know much about him, like I said, except for what we see here in these four verses here. This is the only place he's ever mentioned. He doesn't have any books by his name, and no one else even cared to mention him. But he was someone important. Someone that we can learn from. We know that because that's what Paul wants this Philippian church to see in him, in the way that he describes him. And what did we say was our key? Receive him, the Lord, with all joy, and honor such men as Epaphroditus. If that's the case, then let's take a look at what we can glean from what we know of him. We can start with the name, Epaphroditus. I was joking with a couple of people this morning as they were walking in, and I was talking about preparing this sermon and trying to spell Epaphroditus over and over this week. My son, Caden, thinks that we messed up by spelling his name. He always tells me, everybody always spells it wrong, because we always thought we were really hip by spelling it the way we spelt it, and I don't think anybody else does it, so we messed up our child. Epaphroditus. Epaphroditus is the same here, right? There's a lot of names, and I think Melissa and I were talking here recently about the different Bible names that you see that people name their kids, just obscure names, and Epaphroditus would be one of those. You don't run around meeting a lot of Epaphroditus. And he spells his name E-P-A-P-H-R-O-D-I-T-U-S. And I kept spelling it E-P-H. And so, just like Caden, he has a weird name. Epaphroditus, his name is related to the cult of the goddess Epaphrodite. That makes sense, doesn't it? We see why now. And it's related to that name, and he is therefore most likely a convert from a genuinely pagan family, and that came from probably a pagan background. That was so common in that era and in that region where he would have grown up. He had been a Gentile. In other words, probably came from a family who thought highly of that goddess Epaphrodite. And somewhere along the way, most likely because of this Philippian church and what we talked about last week and how this church was formed and how the Holy Spirit led Paul there at every turn, because of this and that church, he had come to Christ. But all in all, he was just a nobody, right? No noble background in Judaism like Paul did or Timothy had. No long family tree of faithful Christian believers, as most didn't have in that time, obviously. Just a guy named after a goddess, right? Just a guy named after a goddess from the other side of the tracks. Yep. Paul had, you know, had such a high regard for him, didn't he? And Epaphroditus was an emissary. He was a messenger for this church in Philippi. That's how he served. He wasn't a deacon. He wasn't an elder. He's just the guy they sent to carry this gift from the church to Paul and to minister to him. Just regular average Joe. I say just a guy loosely here. He apparently had been somewhat trustworthy enough that he had established himself to carry this duty out for the church that would have been seen as somewhat important to them. I brought up Phoebe doing the same thing, carrying a letter back to the church. Just to show you that women in that time weren't held as in high regard. But yet Paul lifted that young woman up to in high regard because of the job that she was doing, a meaningless job that she was doing. Epaphroditus would have been no different. So Epaphroditus, with a gift in hand, as a monetary gift, he was sent to Rome deliver it to Paul, to minister to him, to basically serve him in whatever way that he could. Now, somewhere along the way, as he was traveling to Rome, maybe either before he reached Rome or when he got to Rome, Epaphroditus became ill to the point of almost dying. And we see that in verses 26 and 27 there. It says, "For he has been longing for you all and has been distressed because you heard that he was ill. Indeed, he was ill, near to death. But God had mercy on him, and not only him, but also on me." It may be, in some of the commentary I read, people get into this. When we don't know a whole lot about somebody, and you just kind of start filling in the gaps a little bit to try to make sense of it all. Some believe maybe that he had fallen ill on the way to Rome. It was common in that time, as you traveled along, he would have traveled west from Philippi to Rome, And somewhere along the road there, he may have become ill and fallen alongside. And in those times, they would stay there. Unless somebody came, a good Samaritan came to pick them up and bring them on to help them, to nurse them back to life, they would just lay there on the side of the road. There was no 911, no EMS, right? You just laid there. You're at the mercy of the passerbys. So that leads some to believe that on his way to Rome, he may have become ill, laid there on the side of the road as he thought he was dying. And as people came by, going back east to Philippi, sent word back to the church, I'm not doing so well. I'm stuck wherever I'm at, halfway between here and Rome. But I still have the gift, and I still plan on making it if I can, but I'm not doing so well. They think maybe that's the case. Or maybe he made it all the way to Rome and fell ill there. We just don't know. But whatever it was, he became ill almost to death, it says there. Church would have been concerned about him. You imagine? I think about it even now without... when I was growing up, we didn't have cell phones, just a phone. And if we were out and about and running around doing errands all day, there's no way anybody could contact us. Doesn't that seem so foreign to us now? Right? And he's even more foreign now to Epaphroditus as he may lay dying on the side of the road, sending a message back. We hope this guy's trustworthy on the way back to tell the church, hey, I'm not doing so well kind of thing. They were worried about him, no doubt, when they got word. No matter what the circumstances were around that, they were concerned about him. They would also be concerned about Paul, who was relying on the support that they were sending there and probably the gift that he had brought with them. So this makes it interesting, doesn't it? They would wonder if he had actually made it there. Did he actually get to Paul? Was he still okay? This may even been, we think of these things as days, right? This could have been months before knowing anything in between all this time. It says there in verse 6, he has been longing for you all. That's what Paul says when he's sending this letter back. He's been longing for you all as he has been distressed because you heard that he was ill. That leads some to conclude that they may have been concerned. Paul was concerned. That they were concerned. Not only about him, but about Epaphroditus. Maybe they didn't think he made it. Maybe they think he failed his mission. Maybe this is his first thing he did, right? He had been sweeping floors in the church, and then as he gets to go on this mission and he's excited about it, then he gets ill on the side of the road. And now he's concerned. What are they going to think about me now that I failed this mission that they sent me on? And this may be the case because Epaphroditus is carrying this very letter that we're studying, this letter to the Philippians. This is the letter that Epaphroditus carried back to the church in Philippi. So if that's the case, why is it that Paul is explaining to them what happened to Epaphroditus? Because if Epaphroditus is carrying this back to him, why can't Epaphroditus just bring the letter back and say, hey, by the way, you heard, I was on the road and I was sick and all these things, almost died. I made it there. Paul's good. Everything's good, right? Why is Paul having to tell the Philippian church this in his letter that Epaphroditus is carrying for him? It's almost as Paul is laying out a defense for Epaphroditus, isn't he? That's what he's doing here. He's laying out a defense for him. Paul says in the beginning of verse 25, I have thought it necessary to send you Epaphroditus. He makes that plain. It wasn't Epaphroditus that wanted to come back or was in a hurry to come back. I thought it necessary, Paul says, to send him to you. This is probably because Epaphroditus was coming back early, and that's what Paul's alluding to here. Not only had he become ill and he was worried about what they would think, now he's concerned, I'm going back, and it's way earlier than they expected. Paul's still in prison, and I'm not there to help him like I was supposed to be sent to do, deliver the gift and be a servant for him and help him out. So how does Paul explain this? How does Epaphroditus explain this? He's coming back early. Church would have been concerned, wouldn't they? At least it seems. And Paul seems to think so too, that they'd be concerned about Epaphroditus and whether he had actually done anything. Paul says, I sent him back. I wanted you to know he was okay, he told them. So then Paul gives this account in the letter to let them know. He wants them to know it's It's the opposite of what they think. It's the opposite of Epaphroditus' fear of what they might think. In fact, Paul takes this opportunity to make an example out of Epaphroditus. He doesn't want them to think ill of Epaphroditus. He wants to think of that key that we talked about in the beginning, right? Look at verse 25. I've thought it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother and fellow worker, and fellow soldier, and your messenger and minister to my need. That's a pretty good description of a servant, isn't it? One that's fulfilled his duty. It's a glaring review. It's one we should all seek to obtain. Not because of works, get us into heaven type of thing, but to have those faithful people that we look up to, that we try to emulate, to see us in that way. It's because it emulates Christ, doesn't it? That we'd be happy, be joyous. Look at this. He's described as a brother there, isn't he? Epaphroditus is. That's the way Paul describes him. First, as a brother. And we know what that means, don't we? From our study in this book so far. He was a fellow believer. Epaphroditus probably a new convert because the church in Philippi is new. And coming to Christ there, more than likely. And to hear somebody like Paul say, he's one of my brothers. He's one of us. That was something for Epaphroditus. He's identifying him as a believer, isn't he? He's one of those saints that we said in verse 1. And he also says he's a fellow worker, meaning one who labors for the gospel. Because we know that's what Paul means when he talks about those who labor with him or work alongside him, right? Because his goal was to advance the gospel. So he says Epaphroditus is also a fellow worker, one who labors for the gospel. And in that regard, he's saying he's one of us. He's unified in the same mission that we are. And then he says, he's a fellow soldier. He fought for the gospel. This gives a sense that he's a soldier, someone who has a mission, who doesn't give up no matter what the cost may be. That's what he's trying to say here, is he's presenting him as a military, as military language, this soldier. Any normal person would have failed, but not Epaphroditus. He's a soldier. He fought on. Tough as nails kind of guy. Almost gave his life for the advance of the gospel through his service to the church and to Christ. He put his needs below everybody else's. He put Paul above himself, didn't he? He put the church. He knew what they would think. Reminds me when I was in the service, when we would eat. We did this even when we weren't deployed, but we also did it when we were deployed because it was kind of the fulfillment of that. But the leadership, the NCOs and the officers didn't eat until all their soldiers ate. So if you were, and we learned this early on, all your men eat before you eat. And it was meant that there's only a handful of leaders and a whole bunch of grunts out there, right? Who's going to win the war? Those leaders are all those grunts. All those grunts. They need to eat. It was learning to put them, and it was also a good leadership quality and trait to demonstrate to them that you're putting their well-being above your own. And I think about that as Paul uses this language here of a soldier to see that way. Someone who has a mission that they carry out, but they count others as more significant. They're willing to lay down their life for others. And Epaphroditus was one of those men. He was a soldier, a laborer for the gospel. And in that regard, Epaphroditus is someone that should be looked up to. Someone who should be emulated. He was also a messenger. A messenger sent from the church to encourage Paul. Think about that. Nobody Epaphroditus with a name like that is going to encourage Paul, right? Paul, who wrote the vast majority of our New Testament, his letters were already being distributed, right, around. Everybody knew him, and little nobody Epaphroditus is going to encourage Paul. Remember when we talked about our duties in the church several weeks ago? Our duty to walk alongside one another, to encourage one another, to lift each other up when we're going through things. That's part of what we do in prayer, too. And Jonathan does a good job about that, about bringing up prayer requests so we can pray with one another and encourage one another. That's part of our job. And little nobody Epaphroditus was going to encourage and support Paul. He was such a man. Even if it meant his own demise. Even if it meant his own well-being. Again, it's as if he's putting Paul and the church before himself, wasn't he? Putting Christ first. You see how Paul's using that example? How he's at the end of this chapter 2, being light in the world is what we've learned throughout this chapter and all the deep theology there. We come to the end and Paul gives us two people to emulate. Timothy, the young man, the young pastor, preacher, teacher, leader, who has learned to emulate Paul and be Christ-like in that way, and then this young Epaphroditus. Epaphroditus had brought a gift to Paul from the church. I told you it was a monetary gift to help Paul while he was in prison. This was essential in that time because generally when they were in prison, now Paul wasn't in prison this time. The next Roman imprisonment when he dies, he would find himself in the deep, dark dungeon. This time he was kind of under house arrest. But even then, they had to be supported. This wasn't like now where we have all these rights in prison, right? And you balance nutritional diets and everything, you know, and all this other stuff. They relied on outside help. Family. If you didn't have family, you just out of luck. People had to minister to them. They had to bring them food, take care of them, encourage them, these type of things, because they didn't have any of this stuff. So it was essential. They would go without meals or eating if nobody brought anything to them. And that's what Paul's trying to relay here. He's just a guy delivering a gift. But this was the role that he had been given, Epaphroditus. I think a lot of times in the church, people get hurt because their status in the church is less than what it should be. We've all probably seen that in churches before. There's hurt feelings. Someone else got to teach the Sunday school class, or brother so-and-so got elected as the deacon or the elder and you didn't. We don't have that problem in this church yet, but as we grow, those growing pains will come. You've seen that in churches, haven't you? Somebody's feelings are hurt because they aren't elevated to the status they believe that they should hold in the church, even to the point where they may even leave the church because they're not quite as highly regarded or respected as they should be. It's just a vision that comes in the church, just another way. Epaphroditus' job was not glamorous, as many of the others may have been. But to him, it was everything. It meant everything to Epaphroditus. It was so important that he faced death to complete it, because it was his way of serving the Lord. 1 Corinthians 10:31. So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Paul wrote that too. You wonder who he had in mind when he was writing these things. Colossians 3:23. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters. Epaphroditus understood this, didn't he? And these verses aren't specifically about service in the church, but your service outside of the church and in your normal job. Paul's talking specifically about service inside the church, But we can also take these same principles and look at it. Not only do you have a responsibility to serve in your church, you have a responsibility to serve the Lord outside of the church in your daily roles at your job and wherever you find yourself, whether you're a housewife or a busy executive somewhere. The example Epaphroditus is setting is not only for the church, but outside. That's what we see here. Paul makes a point here to make this important. But why? Why is it so important? Not only for the benefits that we know of, it's the right thing to do to serve the Lord in whatever way that you find yourself. Paul explains here. The Lord had mercy on Epaphroditus, is what he says, and on Paul. Look at verse 27. Indeed, he was ill, near to death, but God had mercy on him, and not only on him, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. Paul had sorrow to some degree, although we saw that he had joy in prison, but he's being real here. I had a little bit of sorrow. I get a little down from time to time. And having Epaphroditus, y'all send him here to minister to me. And because of me, he comes here and he dies, right? It would have been sorrow on sorrow for Paul, wouldn't it? But the faithfulness of Epaphroditus, that he was willing to do that, that blessed Paul. Paul, who's usually demonstrating Christ-likeness and blessing others, whether it's shipwrecked or snake bit or whatever else it may be, he sees that in Epaphroditus and little nobody. It blessed Paul also, didn't it? That's what faithfulness does. That's what an example does. That's what being a light does. That's Epaphroditus being light to the world, to Paul. He's displaying godly virtue and encourages Paul and it blesses him. Because Paul sees the faithfulness of the Lord in him, in and through that. I think Paul may seeing this as coming full circle. Remember how Paul and his missionary team, along with Timothy, were led of the Lord, the Spirit through Asia, around Asia, up into Philippi there to plant this church, and then thrown into prison there, and all the hardships that Paul faced, establishing this church. Because they went there, the Lord led them there, and they established this church. And because that church was so faithful to Paul, and Paul faithful to them and teaching them, Timothy also being faithful to them, that they produced an Epaphroditus. A nobody with a goddess named after a goddess, some pagan god, who came to know Christ and now is ministering to Paul. Comes full circle, didn't it? He sees the faithfulness, Paul does, of the Lord in through that. Paul wants these beneficiaries these Philippians to be beneficiaries of this same view, the same joy he had in seeing all of this. And so in verse 28 there, he sends him back to them with this letter. He says there that they may rejoice at seeing him again. And he tells them, receive him the Lord with all joy and honor such men. Men and women willing to serve the Lord no matter the cost. No matter how mundane the job is. Those people you honor. Their joy will be in seeing the faithfulness of the Lord too, in and through Epaphroditus. They'll be encouraged, won't they? When they see Epaphroditus carrying the letter back and think automatically, back too soon, must have messed up something, and Paul sent him back. And then when they read this letter in Paul's defense of Epaphroditus, They read of what the Lord did for him, and through their gift to Paul, and blessing Paul. They'd be encouraged, wouldn't they, in the Lord? They'd have joy in the Lord. That's what faithfulness does for us. That's what unity looks like that we've been talking about for these weeks. Being happy, being joyous for those, seeing others succeed in their walk. As we labor alongside them for the gospel. We see the Lord's faithfulness and we're joyous. And these are examples for us to follow. They demonstrate this unity for us, don't they? They demonstrate Christ-likeness. Paul has just gotten through explaining who Christ was in this that old hymn that we talked about. And then he demonstrates with one more significant, the elder preacher teacher, one less significant than nobody, Epaphroditus, how they both were serving the Lord no matter where they found themselves. You don't have to be the elder preacher teacher to be serving. You could be the messenger, right? And serve the Lord with all your heart, wherever he has you. And the Lord then blesses that and encourages others, even the most basic of jobs. So we have to ask ourselves then, how are we doing then at serving the Lord where we're at? Have we gotten in a position, even if you're serving in the church or in some other way, serving the Lord outside of the church in one way or the other, have you come to a point where you just feel like it's not worth it anymore, like you're not really doing much for him anymore? You deserve something bigger, better, more elaborate. Or do we recognize that the Lord, if we're being faithful, the Lord has us exactly where he wants us? Maybe the only stumbling block we have is that we don't see our role, as meaningless as it may be to us, as significant as it is to the Lord. Because you can imagine when Epaphroditus left off on this trip to bring this gift, minister to Paul, and then come back, he had no idea that Paul would be so encouraged. Maybe he had hopes. Maybe the church had hopes for it. But I doubt Epaphroditus was going thinking that he would be encouraging the big, great Paul, the great missionary who traveled all around the world encouraging others, doing all these things. I guarantee you the stories were abounding over Paul, right? I mean, we see the stories here that we know are truth of the snake bites and the shipwrecks and all the other things and the imprisonments and the beatings and everything. You can imagine in that day and age, as it would be in this day and age, that these stories would grow, right? Be huge. And little Epaphroditus is going over there to encourage Paul. And not only did he do that, he excelled at that. Excelled at it so much that Paul included him in the letter here back to the Philippian church to encourage them as he had been encouraged. To receive him in the Lord with all joy and to honor Epaphroditus. Because Epaphroditus was faithful in the little things. Are we setting the example too? Are we light in the world? If we're wrapping up chapter 2 now, as we finish it this week and start in 3 next week. Epaphroditus was light in the world. Timothy was light in the world. We talked about Mark. We included him. Phoebe. Are we faithful in the little things? Even where you find yourself now. No job is too small, is it? You're doing it all for him. And that's what matters. And that was the whole point of this chapter here over the last few months. Is recognizing that Christ is the ultimate example. recognizing our call to be light in the world, to shine light, to point others to Him. See Christ as that ultimate example. See Timothy and Epaphroditus. And I would encourage you this week to sit down and just reread through chapter 2 that we've been through now. Take time to go through it and underline some parts. Think of the messages that we've gone through and the things that we've learned as we've gone through this. And look at it. And every week I've left you off with some sort of encouragement along with myself to be better at that every week. And now maybe is a good time as we finish this chapter this week to read back through and evaluate where we're at on that. I know as I looked this week through this, that's what I did. And yesterday, I read back through, yesterday morning when I got up, I read back through it again, looking at it and all the things. And I look back at all the encouragement. And I feel like John Mark. I feel like, there's been times where I've been like Mark and I've left the missionary team and not fit for service. But it's never too late, is it? We can be like Mark in the end. And Paul telling Timothy, send me Mark. He's useful to me. If you haven't found yourself useful, maybe be like Mark and find ourselves useful. Let's pray.